I'm always happy to welcome Kate Fadick to the studio. She's with me tonight on the occasion of the publishing of her first book of poetry. It's titled Slipstream. Kate, welcome.
Thanks, Barbara. It's really good to be here. On the way over, I was thinking that I really consider this station one of my first publishers. I've been on a few times, and it's really been a wonderful experience.
Well, wonderful for us and our listeners also, and congratulations on this really special event.
Thanks.
A first book, especially of poetry, is quite something to have accomplished. Tell me a little bit about what poetry is in your life. What place does it have?
For me, I can't imagine not writing. I'm just emerging as a real poet at age 67. But I've always been writing, but I'm now at that point of considering it my work. And I think for me, it's entirely necessary. It's a way of seeing my life, a way of seeing the world, a way of seeing interactions between human beings and the natural world. And I can't imagine not trying to find language to make that available, first of all, to myself and then to others.
So it frames everything for you, so
yes,
to speak?
Yes, it does.
And I want to ask you to start off with the title poem, but if you would, first tell us what slipstream means and why you chose it.
Have you ever been on the highway and gotten behind an 18-wheeler, and if you get in just the right spot, you don't have to use your accelerator. You're just pulled right along by that truck. Well, that's a slipstream. It's that suction that's created by a fast-moving object that can take along whatever's going behind it. I've learned also that it's a term used to talk about fixing a bug or enhancing computer software, but that's not the theme running through my poems. I chose it as the title largely because I think as I look at the work as a whole, there are these energies or these threads that kind of pull all the poems along and help them cohesive into something readable as a chapbook. Slipstream. I arrive on the heels of a Mississippi hurricane whose name I can't remember, too late to view her body before cremation, and still days to wait for the boat ride on a calmed gulf. Four dolphins alongside the bow where I sit alone, pulled by water towards some place I've never been. My mother wanted to live on this water. She thrived here. Happiest she'd been in a long time. I lean over the boat's edge, open the small gray box. Shards fly out, settle into what she loves.
Your poetry often celebrates, or in this poem commemorates, something that may be special, but often that happens in our everyday lives, which is something that really speaks to me, giving us the memory of it, saving it somehow, putting it in a, not a box that's closed, but something that we can go back to again and again. And there's this wonderful poem of yours called Artisan Bread, and it just conjures up this lovely sensorial experience while asking a deeper question. Let's hear Artisan Bread.
I'd love to read it. Artisan Bread. I stand in the yard to make friends with idleness. Nothing must be done this afternoon. So when I remember the photo in Bon Appetit, a colorful mix in an iron skillet, I look until I find it. Sautéed shredded Brussels sprouts, smoked ham and toasted pecans. In this picture, they are bright green, look crisp and tender. The caption says it will take 40 minutes to trim root ends, slice the tiny ribbons. A sepia scrim stretches over the afternoon. Tiny flakes begin to fall. I watch Junco birds discover the flat pan of seed on the round table. Is this the winter I begin the practice of making bread? Water, salt, flour, yeast, blistered crust that holds sweet softness.
Delightful and delicious, the humble Brussels sprout celebrated. We had a chat recently, and I was commenting on, perhaps bemoaning, the loss of richness of language in the age of Twitter. But you had a different perspective, and one that I found fascinating, It was about the economy of language. So talk a little bit about that in your writing life, your appreciation of it, how it works.
The challenge of having to get a message across in 140 characters, not words, characters, that Twitter requires translates for me into writing my poetry. When I think about what is really the heart and core of what I'm trying to say, and how can I do that with words that communicate it without a lot of embellishment around them? I find my own poetry becoming sparser in language. I recently revised a piece that I've been working on for 7 years, and it now has one-third the words it had a week ago. And I think it's a better poem for that. I'm drawn to that as I read more poets like Kay Ryan, for instance, who can put so much into just a 5-line poem or a 20-line poem, but the words on each line may be no more than 2 or 3. It's a discipline I'm finding really useful in getting at what I want to say.
Does it have anything to do with action words versus adjectives, or not really? One could use any part of the language as long as it's really needs to be there.
I think you've said it well. Fewer adjectives or adverbs, I find, are better. And it's amazing how many times I, as a poet, might use a word like the or a, and it doesn't have to be there. It's easy enough to take out.
I'm thinking also about an experience you and I have had, and sometimes in common, sometimes in different places, which is writing with other writers. I think when I was younger, I thought of writing as a solitary activity, and part of it is. There needs to be that time also. But tell us a little bit about the importance at this point in your writing life of being in community with other writers.
For me, at this point, it's not so much to get ideas for what I want to write as to get feedback on what I'm writing. Is it working? Does it communicate? Does it stir emotion? And I'm part of a couple of groups where we do a peer evaluation of each other's work. And it's amazing what can happen when I take either a very early draft or something that I think is almost finished and listen to 10 to 12 other people comment, react, respond. And I can't imagine writing without that. Like you, I understand the solitary aspect of it. I think it's Mary Oliver who said, you just need to forget workshops and groups and get by yourself and write. There is some of that, I agree, but I can't imagine not having that with other writers in my life.
Does part of that writing with other writers act as an editing process for you?
It can. Often, we in one of the groups, we talk about point to counterpoint around the table. Someone will say, oh, this works, I think it's wonderful, and someone would say, I would cut the whole stanza, and here's why. And so then I have to take that back, and as the poet, make decisions about, am I going to listen and make those changes? Am I not going to? Am I going to find something in the middle? So it is editing on that level. And then we're good at finding each other's missed punctuation or misspellings, those kinds of things.
We talked a little bit about the economy of language, but you have a poem that I think is just perfect in terms of language. And it's both inspirational as well as realistic. And it's titled, This Is Enough.
This poem came out of working for a long time with people to make what I believed would be significant change in systems and in the world and would lead to a more just world, a more loving world. I found myself recently thinking about how hard it is to even hope for that. I no longer believe that we'll have a world without war. So what does hope mean in that kind of situation? And I'm very influenced along those lines when I think of some of the work of Margaret Wheatley. And she has a new book out in which she talks about it's so important to know that the work we're doing is the right work for us. And I think that's what this poem is getting at. This is enough. Last week, the 5-year-old was afraid of dirt, what might come crawling out of it, whiny refusals to take a closer look. This afternoon, she squats, pulls dirt back, away, puts one, then another lettuce plant in place, pats the earth around them, smiling, sending me looking for pictures someone took in another time. In one, I bury my face in a peony bloom, in another, squat, pat dirt around an iris flag. This is enough to save the world.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks for visiting with us tonight, and congratulations on the publishing of Slipstream. More to come. I trust you'll share it with us also.
Hopefully.
I've been talking with Kate Fadick about her book of poetry. It's titled Slipstream, and you'll find more about it at WVXU.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Barbara Gray.